Beautiful. Good morning, everyone. So this is the first time we're doing the Shira via Zoom. The weekly Shira from Masechet Chagiga is sponsored by Yitz Weiss, CPA, who always strives to make the result of your tax filings a good reason for Chagiga, and Refuah Shlema for Binyamin Simcha ben Adina Minya.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. We're doing Chagiga Daf Yud tests today, and we're going to start five lines from the bottom on Yud Ches Amud Beis. The Shir today is all about Tumah and Tara, and I think actually that's true for the rest of the Masechta. For the next 7 or 8 weeks, it's going to be all about Tumah and Tara, the laws of ritual impurity and making yourself pure. And although that sounds overwhelming and complicated, piece by piece, it's not that bad. And just to kind of outline and lay out the structure for the day, or for today's daf, I should say, we're basically going to cover three topics. We're going to talk about, first, the concept of kavana, of whether tefillah, dipping in a mikveh, that is, or netilas yadayim, washing your hands, requires kavana for getting rid of the tumah. The Mishnah addressed that. And it talked about how your kavana for one level of tumah doesn't necessarily cover you for the next level of tumah. Meaning, if you are washing your hands, let's say, in order to prepare yourself to eat chulin, then that kavana, that intent, means that your hand washing is not going to be sufficient to eat the next level, meiser. And if you have kavanah to do meiser, that level of intent is not going to be sufficient to allow your hand washing to cover the next level, which is truma, and so on. So we're going to talk, at first the sugya is going to talk about, the Gemara is going to talk about the requisite level for chulin, and we're going to see quickly that you don't require kavanah at all, at least according to one opinion, at least according to Rav Nachman, for chulin. And then we're going to try to prove why that is, and bring some questions on that. That's the first part. The second part of our Gemara today is going to talk about the rules of Kavana. In those situations where you require Kavana, where you require intent for washing or for dipping in the mikveh, when does that intent have to happen? Does it have to happen when you're still in the water, when you're out of it? Can you do the intent? Can you designate a tefillah for a specific purpose after you're out of the water? That's the second topic. And then the third topic is going to be just a very short snippet about who is the author of the Mishnah based on some anomaly in the Mishnah that we'll see. Okay, so let's get started. The Gemara says, again, five lines from the bottom of Yud Ches Amud Beis. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braisa. Notel Yadav, someone who washes his hands. Niskavein Yadav Tohoros. If you had Kavana, if you intended to wash your hands in order to remove impurity, so then it works. Your hands are pure now. Lo niskavin, however, if you didn't have the proper intent, yadav tameos, then your hands remain tame. V'chein hamatbil yadav. The same thing is true not just for washing your hands with a cup, but also if you dip your hands in a mikveh. Niskavin yadav toros. If you add kavana to get rid of tumah, so then it works. Your hands are now ritually pure. Lo niskavein, but if you didn't have kavana, yadav tameos, then your hands remain impure. They remain tame. Fine. So clearly, we see from this braisa that you need kavana in order to remove the impurity. Otherwise, it's not going to work. The Gemara then brings another conflicting braisa. Vatanya, don't we learn elsewhere, bein niskavein, bein lo niskavein, yadav toros. Whether you had intent or not, it works. Your hands will be tahor, will be ritually pure, regardless of whether you had kavana. So which way is it? Do you need kavana for netilas yadayim, or do you not need kavana for netilas yadayim? Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman solves the problem by saying, lo kasha, not a problem. Kan l'chulin, kan l'maiser. That the braisa that said you don't need kavana in order to make your hands ritually pure, that's talking about someone who is simply washing his hands to eat chulin. Right, we have a gezer drabanan that you're supposed to wash your hands before eating bread. We all know that. We all do that. And so when you wash your hands before eating bread, you don't need kavana. You could have been washing your hands to get them clean, and you happen to use the cup and you do everything properly. That'll work. You don't need kavana to wash your hands in order to eat chulin. But when it comes to washing your hands in order to ritually purify them to handle meiser or truma or anything more chumra than that, that's where the kavana requirement kicks in, and that's where you need kavana. So that's the rule that Rav Nachman says. You don't need kavana in order to wash your hands for chulin. And now the first half of Yud Tes Amud Aleph is going to test that theory and try to bring proof for it and try to figure out if that's really true. So Gemara says, "Umina timra duchulin lo bo kavana." How do we know, or where do we derive that fact that washing your hands does not require kavana? Ditanan, because we have a Mishnah that says, "Gal shenitlash," a wave that became detached. This is kind of an improbable scenario, but the Mishnah talks about a situation where if you can imagine yourself sitting on a beach and there's a storm out at sea and the waves are getting bigger and bigger, and each wave gets really big and then comes crashing down onto the shore, but then one wave is so big that it never breaks and the wave just detaches from the sea and flies over your head and then crashes down on the beach behind you, completely detached from the sea. That's what we're talking about. A gal shenitlash, a wave that's detached. Ubo arba'im sa'a, and that wave contains arba'im sa'a, 40 sa'a, which is the requisite shear for a mikvah. Vidnafal al ha'adam v'al ha'kelim, and that wave, after becoming detached, falls onto the person and falls onto vessels, onto kelim with him, pots and pans. Tohrin, that works. Now, it sounds like this, well, let's see what the Gemara says. Katani adam dum yudikelim. It sounds like the person here who's being purified as a result of this wave crashing down on him is in the same boat as, or is in the same category as the pots and pans. Ma kelim dula mechavni, af adam dula mechavin. It sounds like the whole scenario is where no one has kavana. You didn't have kavana to purify these pots and pans. You didn't have kavana to purify yourself. And this wave just happened to haphazardly jump out of the sea and fall on you, and it works. So that sounds like a proof to the proposition that you don't need kavana for netilas yadayim. You don't need kavana in order to become impure. So the Gemara says, well, why do you assume that's true? Mimai, dilma biyoshevu mitzapeh. Maybe this person was actually sitting on the beach, and he saw the waves getting bigger and bigger, and he said, I know any moment now, one of those waves is going to be so big, it's going to detach from the sea, fly over me, and smash over me, and smash over these pots. And so maybe he did have kavana. He did intend to become pure as a result of this wave. It's not a proof. He's sitting and waiting, when he's waiting for the next wave to become detached. V'kelim dumya da'adam, and the kelim are in the same category then as the person. Ma'adam d'bar kavana, so just like this person is sitting and waiting for the wave to detach, he has kavana to be purified by the wave. Af kelim d'mechavim, he also has kavana at the same time for the pots and pans that are next to him to be purified by this wave. So the Gemara then says, well, if that's true, that the case is the one in which the person anticipates the wave happening, and he has kavana to be purified, v'chitema biyoshev mitzap, if that's true, my lememra, that why would you have to even tell me this? Meaning, what's the chiddush at all? The Gemara is proposing here that obviously the case is a situation where the person didn't have kavana, and then comes along this Mishnah and tells you and teaches us that you don't need kavana. Because if it was a case where the person had kavana and was anticipating the wave to come and hit him, so then why would you need this Mishnah to tell you it anyway? Of course it works. Of course he becomes tahor and the pots become tahor if he expected the wave to crash upon him and the pots. There would be no chiddush in that. So the Gemara answers, no, you still would have needed the Mishnah to teach you that. You still would have needed the Mishnah to teach you that the wave purifies, that it works, even in a situation where the person had kavana, because salka daitach mina, I might have thought, ligzor dil ma'asil mitbo b'char dilas shel gishamin, because I might have thought that for a separate, independent reason, this wave wouldn't work to be matayer, this wave wouldn't work to purify you, and that is because of a separate halacha that, let's just picture for a moment another scenario, picture a waterfall. Not a waterfall that's coming from kind of a running river, but let's say you have a large container of, not a container, but a large pool of rainwater at the top. And now you kind of let that rainwater flow out and flow down an incline. And you're standing at the bottom of an incline, or you put pots and pans at the bottom of an incline, and you want those pots and pans or yourself to become purified as a result of that running stream of water coming down an incline. So whether or not that works is going to depend on whether or not the running water falling down the incline is considered attached to the pool of water at the top, because a mikveh requires 40 saw. So the way Rashi actually has two explanations of why this is a problem or why this doesn't work. But his first explanation is an incline, water falling down an incline, is not considered attached to the water at the top of the incline. And therefore, it's not it fails the 40 saw test. It doesn't have enough volume of water to form a mikveh, and therefore it doesn't work. The second explanation Rashi gives for why this water falling down the incline doesn't work is a very interesting, called separate discussion, which is that there are two types of mikvos in the world. There are two types of bodies of water that can purify you. There's a mikveh and there's a mayan. A mikveh is a standing still pool of water that we know of, right, that is filled with rainwater that's never been contained in a kli. And one of the requirements of a mikveh is that it's got to be standing still. That's as distinguished from a mayan. A mayan is a spring. And a spring, it doesn't actually require 40 saw to be in one place. A spring could be a flowing spring. So if you can imagine a lake where the water is constantly flowing because it has a kind of a spring under the lake feeding the lake with water, and then a waterfall or a stream coming out of the lake. So that water is always flowing. It's not really stagnant. It's not just considered a mikveh. But that works anyway. You could be matire yourself in a lake because it has a status of a mayan. It has a status of a mayan. It's constantly being refreshed by new, fresh spring water. And so even though it's moving, it's not a problem. So this Rashi's second explanation of why this chardulus shel geshamim, the water falling down the incline, why that doesn't work is because it's not stagnant. It's not in one place. It's not considered ashporin. It's not derech ashporin. It's derech zechila. It flows rather than being a stagnant thing. And since it doesn't satisfy the requirements of a mayan, it's going to fail as a mikveh because it's moving. But for whatever reason, whichever of those two reasons, this body of water, or I should say this 40 saw of water, part of which is flowing down an incline, is not going to work as a mikveh. And so the Gemara says that you might have thought that in the wave scenario, even though that wave is okay, halachically, you might have made a gezeira saying that you can't, that the wave is not effective as a mikveh, because you might come to conclude that the water flowing down the incline is permissible as a mikveh, which it's not. And so that's the reason why you might have thought that's a problem. Inami, nigzor, rushin, atu, kipin. The second possibility is the reason why the Mishnah says that that wave is okay, and the reason why it has to teach you the wave is okay, and you wouldn't know that naturally, is because you make a gezeira. The way we described it is that the wave crashes down on you, and at that point, the mikveh is effective, right? The wave crashing down on you on the ground is effective and purifies you and the pots and pans next to you. But what definitely wouldn't work, and Rashi says, is because we know that a mikveh has to be in the ground, what definitely wouldn't work is if you see the wave coming, flying off the sea, and then you lift the kelim up into the flying wave, that wouldn't be effective because a mikveh is only effective on the ground. And so what the Gemara now suggests is nigzar rushin atu kipin. You might have, the Gemara is suggesting now that the reason why the Mishnah has to tell you that a wave is effective as a mikveh is because you might have thought that we have a gezeira, that we would have made a gezeira that you can't utilize the wave even when it's on the ground, lest you might have utilized the wave when it was flying in the air. And so Kamashimon Dulogazrina, for whichever of these two things we're concerned about, whether it be the flowing water down the incline or the possibility of using the wave while in the air, says the Mishnah, we don't make that gezeira. You can use this wave. But flowing back to the flow of the Gemara here, the point here is that the Mishnah is teaching you can use this wave, but it's not teaching us anything about, it's not a proof to our issue of whether you need kavana, right? Because it's possible that were sitting on the beach anticipating this wave to come to you. You had that kavana, and that's why it works, but not otherwise. The Gemara then just finishes this up. Uminah timra d'lomat bilin b'kipin. How do we know that's true, that you're not allowed to toivel in the air if the wave was still flying in the air? D'tanya matbilin b'rushin v'ein matbilin b'kipin l'fish ein matbilin b'avir. We have a specific price that says you can't toivel something while the water is flying in the air. It's got to be grounded. It's got to be on the ground. Okay, so that first attempt to prove that Netilas Yadayim doesn't require a kavana failed. That wasn't a good proof. We're going to try another proof. We're going to try another proof again to prove our proposition that Netilas Yadayim doesn't need kavana. You don't have to actually have intent for it to be effective. Elameha. We're going to try them in the following. Ditana. We have another Mishnah that says Peros Shanaflu Lutok Amasamayim. Let's say you are washing your dishes, or not washing, let's say you're washing your fruits, or you're just handling fruits above a pit of water, and the fruits fall into the pit of water. Upashat, and now you go into the water, you stick your hands down into the pit in order to retrieve the fruits. You want to grab the fruits out of the pit of water that they fell into. So Misha Yadav Tameos, Upashat Misha Yadav Tameos Vinatlan, and your hands are impure, they still need to be washed, and you went down into the pit and grabbed the fruits out of the pit from into which they fell. Yadav Tahoros, so that works to make your hands pure, they're tahor. Uperos Enon Bechi Yutan, and the peros don't have a status of Chi Yutan. This is talking about a general rule in terms of Hilchos Tumah Tahara, that when it comes to food transmitting Tahara, transmitting Tumah, Tumah is only transmitted on a fruit, let's say, if the fruit is wet. This is why, this is one of the reasons why at the Pesach Seder we wash our hands before dipping the karpas into the water, into the salt water, because we're going to dip the karpas into salt water and the water transmits Tumah, and that's why you do Netilas Yadayim. But this is a general rule in Tumah and Tahara that in order for Tumah to transmit on food, the food's got to be wet. The fruit's got to be wet. But there's a biblical requirement that the wetness of the fruit has to have been preferred by you. If food just gets wet willy-nilly without you kind of intending for the food to get wet or without you wanting for the food to get wet, that wetness on the fruit is not going to be sufficient to transmit Tumah. And so here, the fruit fell into the pit without you intending to put it in, right? And then you put your hands into the pit to get the fruit, but not with any intent to clean your hands necessarily. So we're saying that since no one intended anything here, the fruit, you never intended for the fruit to fall into the pit, you never intended for your hands to be purified as a result of this, it was all just willy-nilly, so therefore the peros are einan b'chiyutan, they don't transmit tumah through this wetness, because there was no intent. So that's the first scenario. Vim b'shvil sheyudcha yadav, however, if you saw the fruit falling into the pit, and then you put your hands into the pit in order to retrieve the fruit, but at the same time you said, oh, this is a good way for me to wash my hands before eating bread. So then, yadav toros. So then that works, right? Your hands are pure. Not only that, vaperos harein b'chi yutan. And the peros are now in the category of b'chi yutan. The wetness of the fruit is as if you intended to make them wet. And therefore it will transmit Tumah. Even though the fruit, when it fell in, you never intended for the fruit to get wet when they first fell in, your later intent of putting your hands into the water in order to purify your hands, that intent kind of transmits to the fruit, and the fruit's wetness now is as if you intended for the fruit to get wet. Fine. But here the important part is that this braisa, this Mishnah seemed to not to have distinguished between your intending to purify your hands and not intending to purify your hands. In both scenarios, whether you intended to purify your hands or didn't intend to purify your hands come out and they're pure. So this proves to us that our proposition that Rav Nachman first set out, which is that you don't need kavana to do netilas yadayim, and that's going to be our proof. We don't need any further proofs. Esavei Rabba or Rav Nachman. Rabba now challenges Rav Nachman on this proposition, and he brings the following brisa: Atovel l'chulin v'huchzak l'chulin aser l'maiser. If you, this is from our own Mishnah, or this is a variation of our Mishnah. It's the halacha that we saw in our Mishnah that if you do tefillah for the purpose of chulin, right? Straight, the lowest level of intent to immerse. V'huchzak l'chulin, and that was what your intent was. Aser l'maiser. So that tefillah is not going to work for maiser. So the Gemara, now it says hatov l'chulin v'huchzak l'chulin. You did tefillah for chulin, and you intended to do it for chulin. But it's that sounds like you need intent to do it for chulin. Huchzak in. Lo huchzak lo. That sounds like it's only because you intended to do it for chulin, but had you lacked that intent, had you not do it with any intent, then you wouldn't be able to, then it wouldn't be effective for chulin. So the Gemara answer is no, hachikamer, afa pisha huchzak l'chulin, even though you only intended for chulin, not that you needed to intend for chulin, but you happened to intend for chulin, so aser l'maiser, it's not going to work for maiser. The import of this brisa is in this answer is the latter part. It's the fact that your intent for chulin is not sufficient for meiser, but it's not to say that you actually have to have intent for chulin. Esavei, bringing another brisa, tavo velo huchzak ki ulo tavo. If you toivel, if you dip, and you didn't have any intent, it's as if you didn't have. It's as if you didn't toivel. So this sounds like you need intent on every level. My love, ki ulo tavo klal, right? It sounds like your tefillah will be completely ineffective if you didn't have any intent to do tefillah, right? You just went to the beach and you went swimming in the ocean without any intent to become pure. So that sounds like from this braisa as if that will be completely ineffective. It's as if you didn't go into the mikveh at all. So the Gemara answer is lo, ki ulo tavo lemaiser, aval tavo l'chulin. No, what we mean to say is that without intent, it's not good enough for meiser. It won't be effective for a higher level of tahara, but it is still effective for that lowest level of chulin. Again, this doesn't prove anything against Rav Nachman's proposition that tefillah for chulin does not require intent. So who savar dachi kamad chilei? So Rabba, who was the one who was continually challenging Rav Nachman with these challenges, so he thought that this was a weak answer and that Rabba was just kind of defending his position with various answers to the challenges that were brought, but that Rabba didn't have a real strong answer or a strong proof, or that Rav Nachman didn't have a strong answer or a strong proof for his proposition that chulin, that tefillah for chulin doesn't require intent. Nafak dak va'ashkach, but then Rabba actually looked into the Sfarim and thought about it more and spoke to people and did some investigation, and he found a compelling braisa that specifically lays out Rav Nachman's rule. D'tanya, tavol v'lo huchzak aser l'maiser u'muter l'chulin. Here we have an express braisa that says what we've been trying to find this whole way, which is that if you do tefillah and you didn't have any intent, so that's not going to work for meiser. It's not going to work for a higher level of cleansing, but mutter l'chulin. But it will work in order to make you pure for chulin purposes, and that's as explicit as it gets. And so Rabba, I guess, came around to Rav Nachman's view on this, and the Gemara is absolutely conclusive at this point that tefillah or netilas yadayim for chulin doesn't require any intent. If you just did it haphazardly, you just jumped in the ocean, or you just dunked your hands in a pit, or you just happened to pour water on your hands, even without any kavana, it works. Good, that's the end of that the section of the Gemara. Okay, here comes the next section, which was, as we mentioned before, is going to talk about the rules of tefillah, The rules of the intent. Does the intent have to happen before you do the tefillah, or can the intent happen even after? Amar Rav Elazar, Taval V'ala. Let's say you go in the mikvah, you come out of the mikvah, Machzik Atzmo L'chol Mashiyirtza. It's not too late. At this point, even now as you're dripping on the side of the mikvah, you could at this point designate your tefillah for Meiser, or for, you didn't need it for Chulin, as we just proved, you could designate it for Meiser, you can designate it for Kadshim, you can designate it for Truma, you can say, as you're dripping, after having coming out of the mikvah, that tefillah that I just did is for the purposes of Kadshim, let's say. That's what Rav Elazar says. That sounds like a extraordinary chiddush, because normally, when you think of requiring intent for a tefillah, you'd think that you need the intent before you go in, or while you're in there. But it sounds like a chiddush to say that even after you come out and you're dripping on the side of the mikvah, at that point you could designate the tefillah for the proper intent. So let's try to test that theory. Meisve, we have a braisa that says, Odehu rago achas b'mayim. So here now again, you went into the mikvah and you're coming out of the mikvah, but you're not fully out of the mikvah. You're almost out of the mikvah. You have one leg, one foot even, still in the water. So your whole body's out, your one foot is still in the water, you're on the top step. So now, huchzak l'davar kal, machzik atzmo l'davar chamur. If you had previously, while you were in the mikvah, had intent only for a lower level thing, let's say for meiser, and now you change your mind and you say, I want that tefillah to work even for kadshim, for eating actual karbanos, so you could do it. So what happened? I'm sorry. Huchzak l'davar kal, machzik atzmo l'davar chamur. Yeah, that works. You can work while your foot is still one foot in. Allah, but if the foot is not out, you're completely out of the mikvah, shuv eino machzik. Then it's too late, and you can't re-establish a intent for that tefillah. My love, eino machzik klal. It sounds like you can't have any, it won't work at all. It doesn't work at all, that later intent. So that sounds like a direct challenge to the halacha that Rav Elazar just said. Rav Elazar just told us that if you do your tefillah, you come out of the mikvah, and now you're on the side, dripping on the side, completely out of the mikvah, it's not too late. You can still express an intent for what that mikvah was for. You could still say, I want that mikvah to have been for Trumah. I want that mikvah to have been for Kachem. I want that tefillah to have been for that. And here we have a braisa that seems to say that it's only while your foot is still in that you could express an intent, but once you're completely out, it's too late. So that sounds like a refutation or a significant challenge to Rav Elazar's halacha. The answer is low. Odehu, if your foot is still in, we're going to reinterpret this braisa to say, no, if your foot is still in, so then afal pisha huchzak machzik. So even though you intended when you were down there for one thing, let's say for Meiser, so then you can change your chazaka to Truma. Allah, but once you've already come out, what the Braisa meant to say is once you're completely out, you have nothing in there, you're dripping on the side, so then Imlo Huchzak Machzik. If you didn't have any intent, you just went in and were at a blank mind, so then you can designate it now. Vim Huchzak Eino Machzik. But if you went into the mikvah and you had intent at that point, so now you can, and now you're completely out, it's too late to change it. What we're saying is there's a distinction between adding an intent to a tefillah that had no intent, where there's a blank slate, that you could do, is what we're saying now according to this braisa, that you could do even after you're completely out. But if you had an intent for a specific level of tumah, let's say for meiser, when you were in the mikvah, and now you're completely out, so then now you can't change intent. It's easier to ascribe intent to a blank slate than to change intent to a previously expressed intent. That you can only do, the latter you can only do, if your foot is still in. Fine, that's how we're going to read that. That's now consistent with Rav Elazar, who said that even though you're fully out of the mikvah, even though you're fully out of the mikvah, you could ascribe intent, but now we're just limiting that and we're saying that's only if you had a blank slate, if you didn't have any intent when you were in the mikvah. But if you had an intent when you were in the mikvah for a specific level, like for Meiser, so then you could only change that intent if your foot is still, if you still have one foot in the mikvah. Okay, now we're going to just analyze this concept of having one foot in the mikvah and having that have any significance. Man Tana Odei Ragu Achas B'Mikvah. Who's the Tana who says that there's some significance to having one foot in the mikvah? The significance is great, right? We're saying basically, as long as you have one foot in the mikvah, it's as if you're fully in the mikvah and you could change your intent. So who's that Tana who holds that having one foot in the mikvah still works for something? Amar Rav Pedas, Rabbi Yehudahi. It's Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanan. Because we have a Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda expresses a similar opinion. Mikvah shenimdad v'yeshbar boim sa mechuvanos. So the minimum requirement for the volume of a mikvah is 40 sa'a. If a mikvah is only 40 sa'a less a teeny tiny bit, the mikvah is not a kosher mikvah. It's not going to work. You need 40 sa'a or more. And so now, let's say you have a mikvah that's exactly 40 sa'a, not a millimeter more, not a liter, not a quarter of a gallon more. It's exactly 40 sa'a. V'yardu shnayim v'tavlu ze'achar ze'. And now two people go to the mikvah. The first, and ze'achar ze'. One after another. So the first guy goes into the mikvah, he dunks in the mikvah, and he comes out. And now the second guy goes in the mikvah, and he dunks in the mikvah and comes out. So Harishon Tahor, the first guy is Tahor because he went into a 40 sa'a mikvah. Vasheni Tameh, but the second guy is Tameh. Why is that? Because we know that this mikvah is no longer 40 sa'a because we know there's some moisture on the first guy who came out. When you come out of a body of water, you don't come out completely dry, you come out dripping wet. So clearly there's some diminution of volume in the mikvah when the first guy came out. And when the second guy goes in, we know he's in a mikvah that's less than 40 sa. Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, Im hayu ragov shorisho nogos b'mayim af hasheni tor. If the first guy still has one foot in the mikvah, so and then the second guy goes in while the first guy's foot is still in the mikvah, then it's okay. What is that? Why might that be? It's clearly because we're kind of conducting. Picture electricity. It's as if the volume of the water conducts through the guy, and any water attached to the mikvah is still considered part of the mikvah, right? This guy is dripping wet. Clearly his hair is saturated with water. He's dripping, his face is dripping. There's water all over his body. But since he has one foot touching that mikvah, we're going to actually include all the water that's dripping on his body in the volume of the mikvah, so that when the second guy goes in, it's as if he's in a mikvah that's at least 40, that's 40 sa'a. So this seems to be a good demonstration of the fact that it's Rabbi Yehuda who is of the opinion that having one foot in the mikvah, it's as if you're still in the mikvah, because he's the guy who said, he was the Tana who said that the water conducts in that way. Okay. Amar of Nachman, Amar Abba Baravua, Machlokos b'malos Rabbanan. This Machlokos between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan as to whether or not you include the guy dripping when he has one foot in the mikvah, that's only talking about when you go to the mikvah for a Drabbanan purpose. There are all sorts of reasons why.
When the second guy. First guy comes out of the mikvah, and he has a foot in there, but the rest of his body is dripping. So obviously, you don't have the 40, but it's still all right.
That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's still all right because the fact that he has one foot on there connects him and all the water on him back to the mikvah. We're going to include the water dripping from him.
But some of that water that's on him on the rest of his body already dripped onto the floor.
I think the way you have to construct this case, I think that's a good question. I think the way you have to construct this case for it to make sense is that it all happens very fast. So it's only for that moment when he's first, or even a picture that he has a foot in the water, but he's not out onto the surface, right? He's still standing over the mikvah. So any drip is going to be back into the mikvah. That's right. But the moisture on his body is going to be conducted back into the mikvah, right? So we're going to be considered as if it's in the mikvah. Fine. So now we say, says Rav Nachman, Rav Ravuna, Machlokas b'malos Rabbanan. This Machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether this works, the situation we just described where the guy has just a foot, his feet in the mikvah and he's still dripping, and does that water on him get included in the 40 sa'a? That's only when you're considering the validity of the mikvah, the acceptability of this mikvah, for drabanan dika purposes, right? There are all sorts of tumas drabanan that are distinct from tumas doraisa. So that's only when we're talking on a drabanan level. Aval mituma litara, but when it comes to real bona fide tuma and tara, divrei akol hasheni tame. So then everyone agrees that this doesn't work, and when the second guy goes into the mikvah, the first guy now dripping outside of the mikvah, it doesn't work because it's missing the requisite shear of the mikvah. Vahainu derav padas, right? And this is consistent with what Rav Padas said above. Rav Padas was the one who just told us that it's Rabbi Yehuda who is the author of our Braisa, right? Because our Braisa is talking on a Drabanan level. Our Braisa talking about the intent, that intent is a Drabanan Dikin intent. So that whole concept is Midrabanan. And so, what we just said, that the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan is when we're talking about drabanan levels, right? That means that on a saying that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who holds of this conductivity of the water, that's true on a drabanan level, and even with a drabanan, the Rabbanan, the rabbis, the Chachamim, disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. So that's consistent with Rav Padas, who said that for purposes of our Drabbanan analysis, it's Rabbi Yehuda who is the one who says this. Ikadamri, now we could flip it and say a different version is. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua, Machlokes mitum otara. This Machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan about whether the guy dripping his water is included in the 40 saw, that's talking about, that Machlokes applies when you're talking about Doraisa tvivos. Avabamalos drabanan, but whenever you're talking about a rabbinic tviva, so then divrei akol afasheni tohor. So then everyone is going to agree that you include the water from the dripping guy in the volume of the mikvah. Upliga de Rav Padas. If that's true, then what Rav Padas says is not exactly accurate. Because keep in mind, our analysis, our Mishnah was talking about drabanan issues in terms of the intent. And if we're talking a bit now, if we're now saying that when it comes to drabanans, everyone agrees that we include that dripping water in the mikvah, everyone agrees. So then when Rav Padas said that it's only Rabbi Yehuda that's the author of our Mishnah, then that wasn't accurate. Because really everyone could be consistent with what we're saying now, that not our Mishnah, this Braisa, that the intent applies even once even when you have only one foot in the water, because on a drabanan level, when it comes to drabanans, everyone agrees, even the chachamim agree, that having one foot in the water is sufficient. Okay, Abar Ula, boy mi name Rav Yochanan. The Girsa says, Bayamine. I asked Rabbi Yochanan the following question. Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, again, Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said that you include the water as long as the guy's got his one foot in. So again, picture the scenario. You have a guy who went into the mikvah, and now he comes out, and he's got one foot in the mikvah, and his whole body is completely soaked and wet and dripping. So if that's true, if it's true that basically that water on his body is connected effectively to the water in the mikvah, so you should be able to now tivel very, very small objects in this guy's hair. If you have a small needle that needs tviwa, or if you have a small sinorios, Rashi explains, some kind of loom for gold. I don't know. They would somehow use this to process gold, melted gold, I guess. But the point is, it's a very, very small tool, a tool that's small enough to fit in your hair. So if this guy now is coming out of the mikvah, his foot is still in the mikvah, and his hair is completely saturated, and his body's dripping water, so all that water is conducted through down into the mikvah. So can you now tovel a small pin in this guy's hair? Is his hair effectively considered part of the mikvah? So the Gemara says, "Good akis isle Rabbi Yehuda, good asik lesle." Do you say that you kind of that things work down? Good akis means it's like that you consider it kind of falling, going down. right? In the case above where we said that the water is considered part of the mikvah, that water is kind of flowing down, and so that works. But good asik, to flow the status up, that doesn't work. You don't give the guy's hair the status of a mikvah. Odilma, or maybe good asik namiyaslay, or maybe once Rabbi Yehuda holds that the status conducts through the water, maybe it conducts upwards also to give this guy's hair the status of a mikvah, so you could actually toivel a pin in the guy's hair. Amar lei tinisua. Rabbi Yochanan responded to Ua by saying, well, let's look at a brisa to try to figure this out. And he says, Shalosh gamios, you have three ditches in a valley. Picture a valley between two mountains, and the valley itself is on a slight incline. And along that incline, you have three pits. Halyona v'atachtona v'emtsois, right? Top, middle, bottom. Halyona v'atachtona shel estrim estrim sa. The top ditch is filled with 20 sa of water, not enough for a mikvah. The bottom ditch is filled with 20 sa, not enough for a mikvah. V'emtsois shel arbaim sa. And the middle ditch has 40 sa. It's a good kosher mikvah. And you have a small strain of rainwater flowing, connecting all three ditches. Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Meir used to say, Matpil Belyona. You can view that top ditch, which only had 20 saw, as a kosher mikvah, because it's connected through the thin run of rainwater to the ditch below it, which was a 40 saw mikvah. So the fact that it's connected means you could actually view that top ditch, even though it only has 20 saw, as a kosher mikvah. So that sounds like we say good asik also, that the status flows up the water, not just down the water, which would mean that in this case you could toivel that pin in this guy's hair. Gemara says, Vatanya, don't we have a brice that says Rabbi Yehuda Omer, slightly different version of this, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Meir Haya Omer Matbil Belyona, Vani Omer Betachtona Velo Belyona, that Rabbi Yehuda actually quoted Rabbi Meir as saying that the top ditch is okay, but that I personally hold that it's not okay, as if to say that the status doesn't flow upwards, which would mean that in our case you can't toivel the pin in the guy's hair. So Amar Lei, Itanya, Tanya. So he says, okay, so Rav Yochanan said back to Ua, okay, if that's in fact the proper girsa of that brisa, and Rav Yehuda doesn't hold of going up, then the status doesn't go up, and then in fact you can't toivel in this guy's hair. Okay, very quickly, let's just finish up the last part. That was the end of part two. Part three is a small sugya that deals with the following question. We, in our Mishnah, if you remember the Mishnah on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, there were five levels of kavana that applied: chulin, maaser, truma, kadshim, and chatas, which had to do with the paraduma, right? So the Gemara says, "Mani mas nisin, rabbanan hi, deshani lu bein chulin u'maaser." It sounds like the author of our Mishnah is the rabbanan who distinguished between chulin and maaser. One of the distinctions was chulin and maaser. Right? The five levels were chulin, maaser, truma, kadshim, chatas. So they distinguish between chulin and maaser. The Gemara says, "Ema seifa." Look at the end of the Mishnah, which says, "Bigdei amaretz medrash luprushin, bigdei prushin medrash lochay truma." So the second part of the Mishnah said that there are different levels of sensitivity that people have to keeping their kalim and their begadim, their clothing, tahor, ritually pure. And people who are used to eating truma, let's say, are going to be careful to keep their stuff pure to the level that's required of truma, but maybe they'll be less careful. They're not paying attention to the level that's required in order to eat kudshim. People who eat kudshim are not going to be paying attention to the level of tumah and tahara that's required for mechatas. So there's different sensitivities depending on what you're accustomed to doing. So it says here, it said in the Mishnah, that bigdei amaretz, the clothing of a normal person who's not necessarily focused on keeping things tahor, So Medrash Lupurshim is considered to have Tumas Medrash, Tumas Medrash is the Tumah that transmits by sitting on something, which applies to Anida. It doesn't apply to all things, but Anida, let's say, we're concerned that maybe this man's wife, who's Anida, sat on these clothing. And so we're saying that the clothing of an Am Haaretz should not be used by Prushim, someone who's makbid on not eating chulin that are tameh. And for that matter, Bigdei Prushim, someone who's makbid on not eating chulin, his clothing should not be used by someone who eats truma because of the concern that his wife, who's Anida, sat on it and transmitted that tumah. If you're curious what the very long Tosos is on the bottom, this long Tosos is talking about what types of tumah are we concerned about when it comes to medrash, to sitting it, but basically Rashi is the most simple way to go, which is to say we're talking about Tumas Nida. Fine. So the Gemara says, Asan Rabbi Meir, Damar Chulin Umayser Kadadi Ninu. So here we skip the level, right? Because we said in kind of delineating the levels, we talked about someone who's Makbid on Chulin, and then we talked about someone who's Makbid on Truma. We skipped Meiser. So this sounds like the Tana of the Mishnah is only counting four levels. Chulin and Meiser on one level, and then Truma, and then Kachim and then Chatas. So which one is it? The Reisha of the Mishnah sounded like there are five levels because it delineated five levels, Chulin, Meiser, Truma, Kachim, Chatas. And here we seem to only hold of four levels. And it sounds like Rabbi Meir. So Gemara says, Reisha Rabbanan v'Seifa Rabbi Meir. Could it be that the Mishnah is split and the first part of the Mishnah is authored by the Rabbanan and the second part of the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir? Gemara answers, in Reisha Rabbanan v'Seifa Rabbi Meir. It's not such a terrible thing to conclude that in fact the Mishnah has two authors. The beginning is Rabbi Manan and the second is Rabbi Meir. Rav Acha bar Ada masniwa b'seifa. Rav Acha bar Ada had a different approach and he just changed up the Mishnah so that he actually adds in the extra level, Chamesh Malos Muki Lakua Karabanan. Instead of, he just kind of reworks the wording and he says, no, when it comes to this Chashash of Tumas Medrash, you do actually delineate between Chulin and Meiser and Truma and Kajim Mechata. Someone who has Makbid for Chulin, you shouldn't use his clothes if you are Makbid for Tumantar of Meiser. And someone who has Meiser clothes, someone who's Makbid on Meiser, Tumantar, so then his clothing should not be used by someone who's Makbid on Truma level of clothing. He just adds an extra level. And Muki Lok Rabbanan, and then Rabbanan, and then it all fits with the Rabbanan. Okay, the last two lines of the sugya go with kind of the next Amud, and I hope you were able to follow that. It's not the normal stuff to Mentar. It's a little complicated.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank